Hey, just a heads up, this is a longer episode than we usually have for The One Thing, but we think it's worth it, so enjoy this extra long episode. G'day, I'm Peter Blanche and welcome to The One Thing, a podcast designed to give you one solid practical tip for gospel-centered ministry every single week. And The One Thing is brought to you by Reach Australia. At Reach Australia, we just love to see deeper disciples made, obviously in ever-increasing numbers. We just want to see Jesus loved and followed in thousands upon thousands of healthy, evangelistic, multiplying churches right across the country. Today, we've got The One Thing episode, and it's our guest today is Lauren Errington. And Lauren is the Executive Director of the Family Systems Institute based in Sydney and a trained mental health social worker and family therapist. Welcome, Lauren. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Peter. Great to be here.
Oh, it is great. That's an impressive kind of title that you've got there. But look, first and foremost, you are a Christian person who's loved by God deeply. Lauren, what's the current joy you've got in following Jesus?
Yeah, I think a real current joy of mine is being at the church that I'm at, which is Newtown Erskineville Anglican Church. I love our community. It's a really diverse and eclectic community with a range of people and ages, and I love being part of that congregation and seeing people come together every week and during the week, just living out the gospel and serving God in different areas of their lives. And I love hearing from people about what that's like and getting alongside people in that as well.
Family of God is such a joy, isn't it?
Yeah, amazing.
Sometimes it has its hard moments, but it is a deep, deep joy that God has given us. And look, it's great that you've joined us on The One Thing. You pressed play and the episode today is called How Can My Help Get in the Way of Caring? Lauren, this is a great question. Is it possible for my help to get in the way of caring? And in what ways can my help get in the way of caring for others?
Yeah, it's a slightly odd question, isn't it? Because we assume that these are all good things. Of course, we want to care for people and we want to help people and we want to love people. And caring and loving other people often means wanting to help them in some way. I think the pointy bit of this question is this idea of helping and what helping actually means and what it looks like. We can really easily make assumptions about what help should look like and rush in and do things or take things on without asking questions or actually engaging with the other person that we're helping. Mm-hmm. And I'm borrowing a question from a man called Dan Papero in Systems Thinking here who asks, what help is actually helpful? It's a really interesting question. And I think to really slow that down raises some really interesting dynamics about what's going on in relationships.
Yeah, critical, isn't it? I help on my terms and my helping is my helping, but it's often potentially not helpful.
Yeah.
When can help not be helpful?
Yeah, and I think that's the right question to ask, Peter. I think it's a really interesting one. There are two things in this, I think. I think the first one is help cannot be helpful for others when it's actually taking over from the other person. And the other person's not actually getting a chance to do their own thinking or be themselves or to work things out in the process. And the second thing is that we think about a lot in systems thinking is how this process actually happens. And what we talk about in systems theory is that help can actually be driven by the anxiety of the helper. So like just what you were saying, Peter, it's actually more about the helper than the person they're trying to help. And I think that's something to really pay attention to.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so two things there. Let's tackle the first one first. What do you mean when you talk about helping is actually not that helpful when it's taking over from another person?
Yeah. What I mean by that is that help that actually takes up all the space and doesn't leave the other person with the opportunity to see whether they can actually develop the thinking or resources themselves to manage things in what they're finding challenging, then that can actually not be helpful for someone else in the long term. So in systems theory, this is the idea of reciprocity in relationships, of over-functioning and under-functioning. They're terms that come from systems theory. And that's a dance that goes on between two people where one person is taking over for the other person and the other person actually does less in response to that. So this dynamic of over- and under-functioning isn't just about what you do, although it can be. So, for example, I think about, parenting my six-year-old, if I'm over-functioning for him and constantly doing his shoes up for him, which he really invites me to do and is very happy for me to do for him, he can happily under-function and let me do that, and that pattern and that dance can keep going around, but it's actually not that helpful for him in the long run. I think about this example because he can actually do his shoes up. Like he's got the capacity to do that and he doesn't need me to do it, although there's many times he'd quite like me to, and that's the emotional pull in the dance, I think. Just don't ask me how often I actually do his shoes up.
I was sitting at home going, tidying bedrooms up, washing up, things like this. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So I think one of the things that we need to be aware of in helping relationships, though, is that over and under functioning happens in all sorts of ways. So it's not just in practical ways or doing things like that. And some are much more nuanced. So it might be taking over from someone in what they do or could do themselves, but it might actually be taking on or feeling responsible for someone else, what actually belongs to them, or what they think or what they're worried about. If we're taking those things on, that's another way that we can be over-functioning for
people.
That's
interesting, isn't it? Because it's not just over-functioning in terms of practically doing something for someone else that they could do for themselves, but you're also talking about emotional over-functioning and feeling things for them that because there's two angles to that.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And sometimes I try and help people imagine that almost like an emotional ball that's being passed between two people, and who is holding the ball, and who is actually responsible for that? Who does it belong to, and how does it kind of get passed? You know, is it a willing pass, or is it being invited from the other person as well in that dance between the two people?
I think in ministry, with both men and women in ministry, there are times where we have capacity constraints to what we can do to practically help some people at times. But that emotional one is constantly there all the time.
Yeah, all the time. And look, it's second nature when you go into a helping profession that that's what you want to do, you know. And so that's why it is a real effort of restraint to work out what actually belongs to the other person. How can I get alongside them and not take over from them in that process? And I think it is really easy to get caught up in that, as you've said, Peter, especially in ministry and in helping professions. And you can see how it happens. If I care about someone and want to help them, how easily it can become that I take over what actually belongs to them. And in systems thinking, we talk about the difference between taking responsibility for someone, so acting on their behalf or feeling responsible for them, the difference between that and being responsible to them. So, for example, I'm not responsible for another person in this way. They're actually their own person. And in fact, what we know in terms of help is that it's good and helpful for people to be treated as a whole person who've got the resources and can develop their own thinking. They've often got really good ideas or they've tried things, and to lean into that and really explore that with people can be really helpful. But if I kind of take responsibility for them, they don't get the opportunity to do that. If I'm responsible to them, that's about managing myself in that, and I'm getting alongside them and in good contact and supportive and trying not to take over things, but encourage them. So I don't know what you think about this, Peter, but I think one of the key questions to ask here is who is actually responsible for what in this relationship?
Absolutely. I think that is such a great question, isn't it? I often have found myself in ministry going, if I could just have their life for this week, I'd make all the decisions for them. I'd hand their life back to them and it would be in such a better place. But it is such a way of a childish way of thinking, isn't it? That taking that over responsibility for people robs them of actually themselves as a key person to take God-given responsibility for their life and the decisions that they're making.
Yeah, and I think you've just spoken into something really at the heart of what can happen in this kind of pull to overfunction for people, which is we want to fix people, you know, and that can be really well-intentioned, that love and care for people and want to do that. But actually, if we're not letting the other person be themselves and develop the agency and thinking and resources that they need, that's much better for them in the long run those things.
This is the key part of this conversation, isn't it? Because my intentions and motives to genuinely want to help someone can be right and honest and correct, but then my application of that can be actually undermining and self-sabotaging genuinely helping that person.
Absolutely. Yep. And then can come with that a frustration that they're not doing things themselves. You know, as that plays out, that's part of the dance and part of the reciprocity.
That's right.
Yeah.
Like, look, can you give, have you got other examples of notice where you see this and noticing this?
Yeah, sure. I can give you an example from working clinically with people. So if I'm meeting with someone, for example, and they come to me with their dilemmas and invite me in as an expert to fix them, it's very easy for me in a helping role to want to take up that position and give advice, you know, tell them what I really think they should do or shouldn't do and help them by directing them. I guess your description, Peter, is a good one. I want to take their lives for a week and, you know, mold it and shape it and give it back to them, you know. And actually in that process, that makes them and me feel pretty good, but only in the short term. What's lost in that process is me giving that person the opportunity to do their own thinking about their problems. What do they actually think is going on? How is this similar or different, you know, to other things they've been up against? What have they tried and how is that going for them? Yeah. This is a really different way of me meeting with someone, which is one of, I think the words come to mind for, of curiosity and respect and interest, which really promotes them as someone with the capacity to help themselves.
I love that. They have lived a life before they've met you. They've got to this point. There has been some responsibility taken. Things might be overwhelming them at the time being, but to jump in and to make this, all the decisions for them and be so directive just in the end robs them of themselves as a key person to take responsibility. Key in Reach Australia is actually taking responsibility. You're saying here in you can actually help people in a way which is unhelpful by actually removing responsibility from them.
Yeah. And your point there, Peter, around they've got a long history of living life and managing stuff before you encounter them or intersect with their life or engage with them. There's just so much to be curious about in what people come with and what resources they have and how they've managed dilemmas and challenges before you've even met them, you know, and that's a real kind of partnership, I think, that curiosity and a helping role that can be alongside someone in exploring that with them.
And giving them that dignity, isn't it, going they're not hopeless. They actually can think about things.
Yeah.
They genuinely can come up with new ideas. They might be in a rut at the moment, but they don't need you to take everything from them to just rob them of their own capacity to take responsibility for themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a great description, you know. And I can tell you as someone in the helping profession, even having thought about this quite a lot, that I can really tell when this is off balance for me.
Yeah.
So, for example, when I have a client who continually comes in with a list of things that they want me to give them advice on or is really dependent on me to be reassured they're doing the right thing, or a supervision group, for example, that's really silent and doesn't contribute or wants me to tell them what to do, my frustration in those cases is a real learning for me, because it's not that I'm critical of their underfunctioning. It's that I actually have to make myself ask the question, how has my underfunctioning in trying to be helpful contributed to that dynamic? So in my desire to be helpful, how have I ended up taking up all the space so that they're actually less confident in their own ability to work this out and need me to do it for them? What can I actually do differently myself to create space for them to find out more of themselves in this process?
I wonder if it takes a certain level of maturity to ask those questions of yourself, doesn't it? Because often that plays your own identity.
Yeah.
I like being the expert. That's what I identify as, and me being the expert helps me feel good.
Yeah.
And so there are identity issues for us there that we can bring to the table of wanting to help other people.
Yeah. And I think the beauty of this thinking too is that I'm not often doing that thinking on the spot. Like, I'm feeling frustrated in those sessions, you know. Like, don't assume that I'm mature by any stretch of the imagination here. What I'm trying to do is to, when I'm out of that and the intensity is lower and I'm actually able to think, to reflect on what's actually happening in those processes, and when I'm at my best, then able to kind of step in and make some adjustments of myself in that relationship.
Critical.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you can see how this plays out in pastoral care. So, for example, the more someone meets someone else's emotional needs and they find a helper who gives them answers, that makes them feel better about themselves and tells them what to do. And the more they'll keep coming back for that as well and increasingly dependent on those relationships to get them through. I think one of the things about overfunctioning is that it's always the case that when someone is overfunctioning, someone else is underfunctioning. And that's pretty confronting because it's one thing to realize you might be over-functioning. And I hear people in ministry often say, oh, I'm an over-functioner, you know, and it's great to recognize that. The next question to ask out of that is, so who's on the other end of that? You know, how is that contributing to others under-functioning, and how is that helpful or unhelpful in those relationships? And then what would it take to manage yourself differently in those relationships?
Yeah, yeah. Now, and I want to pick up on something you said and how it relates to empathy, actually. It is good for someone to be treated as someone who can take responsibility, that they can step up and take more responsibility, have agency in and of themselves. How does empathy fit in with this?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and as helpers, that's a really key question, isn't it? Because we want to be empathic, and we know that's, a key part of what helping relationships are known for. I think an important part of answering this is how you actually see the problem in front of you, because how you see the problem will affect how you actually position yourself in relation to the problem. So, for example, if I think someone is helpless and has a deficit in their ability to cope or think or problem solve, then all the more I will see my role as stepping in to fill the gaps for that person. But if I see someone as a whole person who can feel and think and has a long history of making life work way before I am meeting with them, like we said before, Peter, then this opens up a lot of curiosity about what they think is actually going to help them and what's helped before and what they're actually going to do about it. And what resources do they need to pull in to kind of take those next steps? Yeah. I actually think we've confused empathy with having to feel everything another person feels.
Or which to me, Lauren, feels impossible. How can I?
What an emotional roller coaster.
I cannot. How can I possibly feel everything else that someone else is feeling?
Yeah, that's right. And so I think kind of thinking about this is really important. Actually, you know, we talk about having to have the emotional experience of being in their shoes, so to speak. But I think there is a different way of being alongside someone, which is listening and being curious and asking good questions that gets someone tapping into that part of them that realizes that they can actually think about these things too and make decisions and in fact, have managed quite a lot of things themselves up to this point. My experience of this, and I guess you'd have to ask my clients about their experience of it, is that this is also empathic, but it's different. It's a getting alongside in that rather than being in their shoes. I do think that if empathy means that we have to feel all the feelings, then the danger for me as a helper is that my own thinking is going to get swamped by emotional and I'm going to get overwhelmed and I'm not going to actually be in the best position to help someone else out of that. I think I'm much more of a help to keep my own thinking intact and let the person have their own feelings and me stay thoughtful and curious about that.
I love this thoughtful and curious thing. I find it helpful just when I was thinking about my own experience of Bible teachers teaching me the scriptures. It's when they've made me curious, you try and sort this out, you look at it, bring all your resources to try and understand the passage. That actually has been a far more helpful experience than someone just telling me what to think. Sometimes I'm so clueless I've needed really to be told this is actually how you need to think. But having got a good apparatus of thinking, those who have pushed me to actually bring those resources to help me understand the text in front of me has really helped my own Bible reading and understanding God. But I think there's a similar thing going on here with helping people, that to tell people what to do, to tell people how to feel or how to actually do all that over-functioning for them robs them of growing, actually not just recognizing some of the capacity they've got to deal with it right here and now, but to actually grow their capacity in the future to handle more difficult things.
Yeah, and that's a really nice description of kind of thinking about learning from the Bible and kind of the application in that way as well. If I think about it clinically, there's much more stickability when someone has done the problem solving themselves and come to their own conclusions rather than walking out of a session saying, Lauren says I should do this, or, you know, my therapist says I should do this. You know, when push comes to shove, and particularly in, you know, thinking about when you're under relationship pressure or things get difficult, if someone's come to their own conclusions and it's based on what they actually think and what's important to them, that's going to carry them through the more difficult times
far,
too.
Far stronger, isn't it? The tricky thing, though, is it can feel like if a Bible teacher's done that to me, it can feel like, oh, they're disinterested in me because they haven't told me exactly what they wanted to think. But that's actually not the case. It can appear at one level disinterested or lacking a bit of heart, but actually what's going on is massive interest and lots of heart.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. And look, let's be honest, there's also times where I love to underfunction and I'm very happy for people to tell me what to do as well. So, you know, like I think that's a natural part of our coping and what we need to do in relationships too. But that's a great point in the learning process.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. We've actually dug into how our help cannot be helpful to others when we are over-functioning and not actually giving that person a chance to do their own thinking and work things out. But I want to come back. You said there were two things we had to where our helpfulness cannot be potentially helpful, and that's actually when the helping is more about us and our anxiety rather than about the person and what they genuinely need. Our anxiety and helping, how does it get in the way?
Yeah, that's the second point. I mentioned it a while ago, didn't I now? But coming back to that second point, thanks, Peter. This is the idea in systems thinking that in all human relationships, we're driven by our automatic emotional reactivity to do whatever we need to do to make the relationship more comfortable. Yeah. And we're just wired to do that.
Aren't we? I just see that happening in my own life all the time.
Always.
A bit of anxiety going, how can I minimise it? Not what's best, but just how do I minimise it?
That's right. And when we're talking about anxiety here, we might not even recognise it as anxiety. It's more like an emotional energy, you know, that just propels us to do things just to get more comfortable and make life work. And I think that's the extraordinary capacity of humans to adapt in relationships. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, that's just how we make life and relationships work. One of the things in systems theory that Murray Bowen observed was that there are really predictable things that we do reflexively to basically try and make things go smoothly. So we might do things like distance or avoid things, or we might argue or fight about it. We might talk to others about things to help us calm down or feel better, or we might move to do things to fix things quickly or invite someone else to do it. And that's what we've been talking about with the over and under functioning. But these are all really normal ways of reacting, and we do them all the time, really.
It's insightful because it's when it's said, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
But someone needs to say the obvious because that's exactly what we do.
We can see it, right? Yeah. And these were the observations that Bowen made in relationships, and I think we see play out. But what happens is that in relationships, when we act on these things and they become quick fixes or more intense, when relationships do get more intense, you might get more of these things or more extreme versions of them. And the reason this is important in thinking about the helping role and caring for others is that we're often meeting with people who are upset or needy, and if our automatic response is to move in for a quick fix, that can be much more about calming myself down and making myself feel better and feel helpful rather than actually being able to hear from that person and do what we were saying before, listening to them and asking them good questions that help them tap into a little bit of their own confidence or agency and thinking about how to manage things. From a systems lens, it's important to keep seeing over and under functioning as anxious responses, kind of propelled by this energy. And the effort is to work on managing ourselves and our automatic habits, I guess, when they're not
so
helpful.
So important, isn't it? As I reflect on that, it, in the end, our helping is about helping me and my anxiety, as opposed to genuinely helping you and where you're at.
Yeah.
And going, my helping is, I'm sabotaged because it's about me.
Yeah, yeah. And we do so much of that automatically and naturally.
Yeah.
And I think that's just one of the things, if you're in a helping role, to really slow down and start to pay attention to, because that's about working on yourself and managing yourself in those helping roles.
It's about loving, isn't it? About loving the other person first before loving yourself.
Yeah.
I think I've seen that played out with good intentions in ministry in some ways, where people have someone sick and they've gone, I want to be seen to be praying for them. And so there's kind of like a public scene of someone praying for someone. But in the end, it's all about them wanting to be seen to be doing something as opposed to genuinely loving the person the way that they would feel loved.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And again, Peter, I think this is not – often we don't realise these things in the moment. You know, this is when we go away and can think about them and think, oh, how much was that actually about me, and how much am I actually being able to kind of manage myself and get alongside someone else in that process, you know. And this is quite the workout for a helper. I'm not saying this is easy or light by any means, Because what is actually key here is asking the helper to pay attention to themselves and their habits of swooping in to rescue people to try and make people feel better and maybe overfunctioning for them, which is really about making themselves feel better in the process. Yeah. And it's a massive effort to work on managing your own anxiety in this, knowing your habits, to tell people what to do, what to think, and holding the big picture, which is that having an effort of restraint in this, like what you just said, Peter, is actually a way to care about the people we meet with.
Yeah. I loved your language here of watching your habits. Mm. I do wonder at times, to care well requires a fair bit of self-reflection to go, what's going on for me and am I taking agency and over-functioning for the person? That requires actually not being so busy that you never self-reflect on the care you're giving to others.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really, we can just hurdle from one thing to the other, but sometimes our busyness can kind of keep these cycles going without slowing them down too, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Now, I can imagine people listening here, Lauren, and also thinking around self-sacrifice, that the gospel calls me to be self-sacrificial in my care to others, to lay down my life for them. Does this undermine that in any way?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm always interested to hear people's thinking on this question and hearing about how their own values and principles of care have been shaped by the Bible and their own experiences. You know, I've been to lots of workshops and talks on care over time, and there is a lot of input from the Word of God about caring for others and putting ourselves out there for others, which is so good to think about, you know, and so important to do. The bit that we sometimes miss, I think, is in Galatians 6 in this context, which is often talked about and pulled out in terms of caring for others, where Paul encourages the Galatians to carry each other's burdens. What we sometimes miss is that almost immediately after that, Paul also encourages the Galatians to pay attention to their own stuff. He says, for each one must carry his own load. Now, I think there's something in this. I don't want to make too much of it, but I think when we're not giving of ourselves, so there's no self left to give in some ways, but there has to be a recognition of our human capacity here and a reminder to think about that. So what sort of capacity do I have? What is my own load? What sort of resources do I have to offer to others? And what does it mean to be responsible for my own load in this process? And I do think these questions need to be part of the conversation.
Yeah, that Galatians bit also reminds me about money and about working and how one of the reasons we work, it's not just so I can earn money for myself, but it's actually to not be a burden on others.
Mm.
But then actually out of the overflow of that then to have something to share with others who are in need.
Mm.
But this taking responsibility as well as sharing with others is there too.
Yeah, that's a really interesting connection. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lauren, this is just prompting the core question is what does it take to care for someone?
Yeah, it's a great question to ask here at the end. What I want to say is that Jenny Brown actually has an excellent piece on this question towards the end of her book, Growing Yourself Up. So I am borrowing some thinking from Jenny there because she's just put it so nicely in her writing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first thing to say is that mostly caring for someone means being in good contact with them in a way that is not over-involved or under-involved. So this means for us who might get pulled into over-functioning for someone, working on stepping back a bit and slowing things down to give someone the space to think and work things out while still in contact with you. There are also those of us who might be more likely to ditch a person and distance themselves because they're a bit allergic to feeling responsible for other people. And so it's a different challenge for them to actually stay connected but not take things on in that process. And I think in both these instances, this takes working on being able to tolerate discomfort and working on your own resilience in this. So listening well, allowing other people to be distressed but not feel like we need to fix it, but still staying in contact and connected. It's a real effort to try not to change other people, but to stay connected and share our own thinking along the way and keep creating space for them to respond and think and work on themselves.
It does take effort. I love that line. Yeah, it sure does.
It is quite a workout. Absolutely. And, you know, in that chapter, Jenny talks about a range of other things too, such as seeing the bigger picture of relationships, not taking sides, but helping the person observe themselves in their relationships and thinking about what's working and what's not working and asking about the whole person, not just problems. And I think in a helping relationship, that's really important to keep seeing someone as a whole person and not just kind of have an intense focus on problems.
Yeah. Excellent. Now, Lauren, we're on the one thing. So what's the one solid practical tip for how can my help get in the way of caring?
Yeah, I think if we have to drill down into one thing, it's recognizing that sometimes even well-intentioned help can actually be unhelpful if it gets in the way of someone else being able to grow in their own thinking and agency, and that to try to do it differently takes an intentional effort by the helper to manage themselves in these relationships. So to resist a quick fix and instead to slow down and make an effort to get alongside someone and listen well and be really interested in their own thinking and capacity to manage what they're finding difficult.
This is excellent, Lauren, and thank you for all your help here. And you might be listening and want to dig a lot further. One thing you can do is go to our toolbox there in the show notes. There's a link there to Lauren's workshop at our Reach Australia National Conference in 2023. There's a link to the Family Systems Institute website. But look, Bowen Family Systems Theory in Christian Ministry is a book grappling with the theory and its application through a biblical lens. It's done by Jenny and Lauren. It's a great book of essays reflecting on Bowen Family Systems Theory, but particularly in the context of ministry, super helpful book. There's another book by Robert Krisch, Family Systems and Congregational Life, a book that reflects on leadership, ministry and family systems. And of course, Lauren's referred to the book Growing Yourself Up by Jenny Brown, and it's always a great place to start as well. Now, look, if you have a topic that you'd love us to cover here at The One Thing, then please email us at resources@reachaustralia.com.au. I'm Peter Blanch. Chat soon.